Thank you for coming this morning. My name is Cindy Cunningham, and I'm the founder and director of Village of Hope in Uganda. I know the description didn't have Uganda on it, but we're the best country in all the world. So just in case you were wondering, we call it the Pearl of Africa. So I have to start off by teaching you a word. Now it's hello, it's thank you, and so it's called afoyo. You ready? Afoyo. Now we have to say it louder. Afoyo. Now you just said rabbit to me, so. It's kind of like aloha, you know, and Bud, why are you giving me that look? So I have to put my phone here so I can make sure that I don't go over. Here we go. Okay. Again, I really appreciate you coming, and I just want to say that this is a time we want to see the miracles and the transforming power of Jesus Christ and what He is doing. And some of you have seen, you know, I've seen what was going on, and I've seen the heartbreak of it. And I'm going to show you just a little bit and share with you, but I also want to share with you the miraculous power of His working in the lives of our children. I graduated from Bible College Welch in 1980. And God had used when I was 18, there was a missionary that came to our church in Hot Springs, Free Will Baptist Church. And he talked about Africa, and his name was Dr. Miley. And I remember that night, and I remember giving my life to missions. And I said, Lord, wherever you want me to go, I'll go. And my heart was like, but I want to go to Africa. But it took me until I was 44 before God allowed my feet to touch the soil of Africa. And I remember as I was landing, this woman behind me in the airplane was singing Swahili, and she was singing praises to the Lord. And it was just beautiful, and the sun was setting over the Nile, and I thought, Lord, this is a dream come true to be here. I almost wanted to kiss the ground. I was so excited. And God took me to several countries, and one of the places was Uganda. And I was working for a ministry that worked in southern Uganda, but they didn't work in northern Uganda. They were reconciling tribes with one another. And so I had heard about some war that was going on, and I heard about children being abducted. So I asked the director, I said, will you take me up to the north? And she said, I'll take you, but you have to promise not to cry. And I was like, okay, you know. And so as we drove up this 9-hour road, which now takes about 4, there were potholes the size of cars. And later I found out they were mines, had blown up. So I was like, what is going on? We get to this town, and there was no electricity. The only electricity we had was somebody had a flip phone, you know. And so we're walking down the road, and as we're walking, these children are walking down the streets. They were walking like ghosts. They were thin. They had bloated bellies. They didn't have shirts on, no shoes. And they were just like staring like a zombie. And I'm like, where are they going? Well, they're going to hide. And I'm like, what is going on here? And so this woman named Rose began to share with me how this rebel group called the Lord's Resistance Army, and the leader is Joseph Kony, that's K-O-N-Y, you can Google it later. He had a vendetta against the Acholi people, and that's all the people in the north, because they wouldn't follow him. He said, I'm God, and you have to follow me. And they said no, because they were a Christian nation. And because that, he began to going from village to village. Now, a village is really grandma, grandpa, you know, mom, dad, auntie, the children. That was a village. And he would go from village to village, and he would burn down the huts. that he would rape the woman, he would kill the husband and grandfather, and then he would abduct the children from the age of 6 to about 10 or 12 so that he could brainwash them. And so he would then take them and put this person here, tie their hands, and he would have a rope around the next child, and that child was tied to them, and they were tied together in this little chain. And if they cried, he would kill them. If they fell down, he would kill them. A little boy named Joseph walked up to me, and he said, I escaped from the rebels. He was 8. And they said, they put a machete in my hand, and they said, you kill this boy, or this boy's going to kill you. The little boy was alive. Put the two together. An 8-year-old. So then we went to these places that were all fenced up. And the children were walking down those streets to get to this place so that they could hide here. And they had these huge UNICEF tents. And when I walked in, there were children lined up, spooned up as far as you could see. They said there would be 7,000 kids each night. And they would come to this, no blankets, no food, nothing. They just came there to be safe. So then the next morning, she took me to a place called an IDP camp. It's like a refugee camp. A refugee camp is for people outside of the country. IDP camp is internally displaced. So it's people inside the country. At one point, this little town of Gulu had 10,000 people. And within 48, 24 hours, there were 250,000 people living there. Just so the people had to escape as quickly as they could from their homes, from their burnt down villages, from their families who had been destroyed and killed. And so they came here and they built these little mud huts, and we went through this IDP camp, and I would walk and we would meander through huts, and they were so close together, and I thought, this is so crazy. And it was hot, and I had been there for days, and I had heard stories of children, and I got to the point, I was like, I can't hear anymore. I don't want to know about Norbert, who was 8 and had to kill his mother and father. I don't want to know that. I don't want to know about Richard, who had to kill his mom. These are kids that live with us now. I just can't hear it anymore, or I'm just going to die. Where do I put this in my safe little American mind? There's no place for that. You know, we watch stuff on TV and we see people killing one another. Well, it's not real, right? It doesn't affect us, you know. But this was real. This was real. And so I was back at our little guest house, and we were sitting eating breakfast, and I will never forget this moment as long as I live. And a little boy came up on his knees out of respect, and he said something in his language. And I said, what did you say? And he said, can I have your leftovers? My leftovers. What do we do with our leftovers? We throw them in the garbage. We put them down the garbage disposal. You know, we give them to our dog. My leftovers, I lost it. I said, give him whatever he wants. And I went to my little guest room and I laid on the floor and I said, God, I don't know what you want me to do, but whatever it is, I'll do it. Came back to the U.S., I was ruined. I couldn't work, I couldn't think, turn the electricity light on and I would cry because I have electricity. I would sit on the toilet, cry because I have a toilet. I would go into a grocery store and I just lost it. We have all this food, all these vegetables. They had nothing, and nothing. And I just couldn't do it anymore. So a year later, I talked to the woman that took me up there and I said, I'm gonna quit my job and I need somebody on that side to do something and to help take care of these kids, to feed them, to provide safety. That was the first thing. They need food, they need safety. And she said, well, my sister Rose, who was the one that took you around, she just quit her job because she wants to take care of these children. Is that a coincidence? I don't think so. It's what I call a God incident. So she quit her job. I quit my job. I had $8,000 in the bank living in Dallas, Texas. That's going to last a really long time, right? Yeah, whatever. So I began to tell my friends about it. My friends started giving me money, and I thought, I don't know what to do with this. So I talked to my brother, who's a CPA. I said, what do I do? And he said, you have to start a 501c3. And I kept saying, a 502 what? A 506, you know. And so he took care of that. There were so many times I didn't know how to do something, and God provided that person, you know. And so I was talking to my sister, and I said, you know, they need to have their village restored, right? Because it was all burnt down. They need hope. They need a village of hope. You know, so there's madness in the crazy name or whatever. No, there's, anyway, you know what I mean. There's, yeah, that one. So, thank you, sister. Hey, I have an excuse. I had a brain tumor, right? That's it. Anyway, that's another story. 6 months after I quit my job, I had a brain tumor and I didn't have insurance, but God provided. I'm benign. I just have seizures from it. It's no big deal. In her church, I was in Nashville and I went to their church and I was like, oh, I'm going to have a seizure. Do you have any place for me to sit down or lay down? She goes, oh, in the sanctuary, we have a couch. Who has a couch in a sanctuary? But thank God she did, because I laid down, had a seizure, got up, and I spoke. I have no idea if I shared anything that was right, but I'm sure I made it up okay. So, but anyway, I'm off track. Rabbit, squirrel. It's just been amazing since that time to see how far God has brought us. And I wanted to show you now what. You know, God has done miraculous things. I mean, if you can imagine a child in such trauma, where do you start with them? You know, you start with feeding. You start with providing a home, which we did. We asked the Lord to give us 100 acres or some land, and he provided 100. Okay, we'll take that. We started with an elementary school, and we brought them in and put a fence around it. Who does that? Who puts a fence around their school, right? Who fences in your children? We did. You know, we got a school. We had a medical clinic. They get malaria and typhoid on a regular basis. It's like us getting a cold. Isn't that right, Lynette? I mean, it's just, it happens all the time. So all of these, but we needed a pastor, right? And we needed counselors that would help through this process. You know, we can provide all those things. But at the end of the day, we know it's only Jesus Christ that can transform the life of a child who's so traumatically affected, who has killed someone that they know and love, who has seen all of these horrific things that I will never share with anybody because it's so awful. It's only Jesus that can transform that. Will they ever forget their past? No, not on this side. But God will use that, right? He uses our past to bring hope to others. It shares with that in the scriptures about how our discomfort brings comfort to someone else. So, sorry, I start preaching after a while. But I wanted to share some pictures of some beautiful children that we have at Village of Hope. So I just went there last Wednesday, and I came back like, oh, so excited. There we go. So I came back so excited that you know, our kids, we had this graduation party because we have 172 kids that have graduated since 2015. Now we have elementary, we have high school, we got vocational because some of the kids can't, they're not academically inclined. And so we have carpentry, masonry, mechanics, hairdressing, agriculture, and tailoring. And so these kids are so successful in all of these. Now, I'd like you to meet, where does it go to the slideshow? Here we go. I'd like you to meet, technically. Okay. You need to go with me. So I want you to meet Justin. Oh my goodness, when Justin was little, I would hug him and he was just right about here. He is just adorable. And of course his story, I'm gonna share a little bit about his story with you. But today he has graduated with a Bachelor of Administration. I keep telling him he needs to start working for us because he's organized, he's working for a nonprofit right now. But I'm like, dude, you've so gotta work for us. I instant message with him all the time and he calls me mommy. So he says, looking way back in 2009 when I first joined Village of Hope in the program, my life was gone. It was still going through a series of transformation under the support and care of Village of Hope. I was despised, broken vessel, where there was no pleasure. I turned to the left and right, but there was no way through. Chaos was the order of my day. Cries and the sound of sorrow was the only voice I could hear in my ears. I thank God who always keeps his promises towards his children, Jeremiah 29:11. Indeed, God is still doing miracles and has made my life a living miracle and testimony because of his hand towards me through Village of Hope. Truly, they have brought hope to this hopeless young boy through the help, support, care, love, provision, and other unimaginable words only through my eyes can testify the wonders that God has done through Village of Hope. They have restored love and joy and hope and peace in my life. Looking at the past history of war, where I went through terrible moments in my life at an early age, which made me look down on myself with disdain. Seeing how people were being slaughtered like chickens, even involving my own family, which broke me physically, spiritually, emotionally, and made me hold bad things in my heart. But I have found love and peace in my heart that helped me to learn to forgive myself. You know, it's one thing to forgive what others have done, but for the kids to forgive themselves has built me up to become a young man who teaches the Word of God through the inspiration. My life is truly a living testimony. Village of Hope has helped me and is still helping me to grow in the way and the fear of God, which is the only way to attain all that we want to do in this life through Bible counseling sessions, which has been a great impact on my life. Meet Justin. I just saw him again when I was there. This is Agnes. She has a very similar story. This is a picture of her when she was in those camps that I was referring to. They call them camps, which I kept thinking, I don't understand why you call them that, because we know what we refer to as camping. But she's now a teacher at Village of Hope. We have five of our girls that are teachers. Just so very proud of them. This is Isaac. We went to visit him when I was there this time. And I don't want to go into every one of their stories. I just say ditto. You know, it's just, they're all the same. They all have had their horrific types. But he went through our vocational program and graduated with carpentry. So when I talked to him, he was so excited. I think this one is a video.
Okay, my name is Tolukan Isaac. I joined Village of Hope in 2019. And from there, I went and did carpentry and joined up, for which I actually performed very well. And I'm appreciating Village of Hope so much for the effort that they have put on me that made me at least I'm somewhere right now as they talk. And right now, as I talk, I'm working with one of the company in Macho Hospital, which we have just started last week. And I made it very well. All this appreciation, I take it back to Village of Hope in Ghana for their impacts on me and everything that they have supported me. I'm so thankful for that. Thank you very much.
He had to go into an interview several times. This is the main hospital in Gulu area, and out of all of them, they picked Isaac, and so we're very, very proud of him as well. Now, Franco, again, I love my children. I love Franco. We brought the first 19 to the first home that we had, and that was Rose's home, and she had a home. I think it was 4 bedrooms. With 19 kids. They don't mind having 6 kids to a room, three triple beds. He was the first one, and he did excellent in all of his classes. He was one of the top in all of Uganda in his scores. And so when I was there, he was painting our homes and our school, and it's because we want our kids to give back when they graduate. So they volunteered their time. They were painting. They were doing, we had some concrete work that needed to be done. And they painted my hut really well. And I was really happy to see that. But seeing Franco was such a precious time. This boy has graduated from nursing school. We actually have 17 of our kids that are going to nursing school right now. So Lynette, you need to come over and work with our girls and boys that are in nursing school. And anyway, Ivan was so happy to tell me how he is now an assistant in the nursing program at that same main hospital in Gulu. There, these are some of the things when I went to visit not only our graduates, which we had a huge party, lots of dancing and singing, the Acholi dancing. It's so much fun to watch. And Patricia here was one of our first girls as well. And she wants to be a lawyer. She was so excited, but she also wants to write a book about Village of Hope because she was there since day one, since 2008. So we decided what we're gonna do is I'm gonna write it from my point of view and she's gonna write it from her point of view. That's her dream. But to see these 50 university kids so excited about the different degrees and different things that they can do and are majoring in. You know, it's hard to understand or it's hard to express the joy I feel because it's these little kids of trauma, and now you look at them and they're young women and they're young men that you say, I can't see any trauma in them. You know, it's a miracle. And I'm sorry, but here's some of our graduates in their uniforms. We have, during COVID, a lot of people asked us, what did we do? It was very difficult because during COVID, we had to close down our villages. We had to send the kids back to these camps. They were very afraid. They were afraid they weren't going to get to eat. They were afraid of COVID. For the community, it felt like going through the war again because they were isolated. They lived in fear. They didn't have food. And so they were afraid of dying. So for the people in the communities of northern Uganda, they felt like they were back in the war, and that trauma came back up. Because it's not just our children. We've got people with trauma all the way to grandma and grandpa's, because this war went on since 1986 to 2011. So you've got a vast number of people. So our counselors are my heroes. During this time of COVID, they would endanger their lives. They would take a big truck and they would individually bag up beans and rice, sanitary kits for the people with COVID. And so they would take and deliver those on a motorcycle 30 miles to this village, and they would leave it there, and they would encourage our kids and the guardians and the other orphans. Then they would take another several bags and they would drive it another 10 miles over here. They did this day and night, forgetting their own health, forgetting all the possibilities of what could happen to them, even on the road. Those roads are treacherous, potholes, and they're going up and down and through the bush. They're my heroes. They're amazing, amazing people. And here's some of the, you know, kids receiving and the bags that they packed up. We have the Tabitha program. So we began to realize when our kids came out, also young girls came out. And, I have 10 minutes? Okay. Wow, I didn't think I would take up that much time. But these are the women that they were little girls and they came out with babies. And so that's when we started that program where you're seeing all of the baskets and everything. This is a way for these girls to be able to provide for themselves and their families. I talked to you about the vocational already. And so these are some of the great things that we're able to do through the vocational. Another program we have is the Guardian Angels. Our kids during school holidays, they have to go back to those camps. They're staying with, we found older people to take care of them. These are the only families they have. Parents, brothers and sisters, all of that are dead from the war. We found these guardians, but they came through the war. They have their own trauma, alcoholism, they would beat them. So we try to do counseling with them. We have over 1,000. So we also were able to provide 140 goats, an organization that's worked with us since the very beginning. World Help gave us 140 goats. This couple here, they've been married for 60 something years, and they got one of the goats. They were so thrilled. They take care of one another. He's deaf, she's blind, but they're going to raise this goat. When the goat has babies, the first one comes back to us so that we can give it to another family. So that's our goat program. So now what? There's so many more to help. You know, there's so many more kids that are orphans. You're asked, how can we help? The first and the last one is the most important to me, is people to pray. If it wasn't for people standing in the gap for us, because the evil one has his grip on these children and this war and the people that have been traumatized. During COVID, because of the despair, people were killing themselves. So, invite me to come to your church. If you have a couch, that's a really good thing. We'd love to come. I'd love to share with them. I won't take up this much time, I try to promise. But we'd love to be able to come to share the praises, the pain and the praises with you.